Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast, Think Outside the Survey, Market Research Methods for Customer Insights. I'm your host, Nancy Bacala, Senior Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Catherine Korsoff, founder and president of Research Rockstar, the only independent company dedicated to market research training, both online and in person. Catherine has a special interest in how organizations acquire, manage, and apply market research. Over the past 20 years, she has personally directed more than 600 primary market research projects and published over 100 bylined articles in various magazines, including Quirks and the MRA's Alert magazine. Catherine is also the author of the book, How to Hire and Manage Market Research Agencies, available on Amazon. She's been a featured speaker at American Marketing Association and Marketing Research Association events and is frequently hired by clients to facilitate on-site market research workshops. Catherine also serves as group owner of the Market Research Group in AMA Connect, the AMA's online community for marketers. Prior to Research Rockstar, Catherine completed the transition of Sage Research, an agency that she founded and led for 13 years, to its new parent company, Chadwick Martin Bailey. Catherine also serves on the board of directors of the Genesis Fund, a nonprofit dedicated to providing resources to children born with genetic diseases. Catherine, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Nancy.
Catherine, you've titled your new ebook, Thinking Outside the Survey. Why do you think that's important for today's market research to do just that?
Well, I think there are really two issues here. One, which might sound a little self-serving for us market researchers, but there is an issue of job protection here. Unfortunately, not a lot of market researchers seem to be embracing some of the new methodologies as robustly or as eagerly as perhaps we can be. And the reason why that's important is because there are a lot of new non-survey-based methodologies out there. They are being used. Many are gaining in popularity, but they aren't being used by traditional market researchers. In fact, some of the methodologies that I talk about in the book, like prediction markets and idea management platforms, are actually being used by functions outside of market research. These things are being used by product development teams, the general marketing department, sometimes a PR function or a brand management function.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's really market research.
Right.
So we are, in a way, sort of losing control over some of the things that are being done here. So my concern is if all of these things are starting to be adopted and deployed within organizations anyway, but market researchers aren't involved, that's a real concern because we may become irrelevant if all the hot new stuff is happening outside of market research, if all the hot new stuff for gaining customer insights and understanding market trends actually happening outside of the market research function.
You know, I think that's a very valid point. In the book, you discuss a wide array of methodologies available to researchers today that go well beyond the focus group and survey. And you alluded to that perhaps not all researchers are really engaging around those methodologies. What do you think is required today for researchers to really effectively add some of these different methods to their research toolkit?
Well, a lot of patience, unfortunately, because nothing is going to come easy for us these days. The noise level is so high in terms of all the things that are vying for attention in the world of marketing and market research. In my experience, what works best is demos, demos, demos. We have to be relentless in showing our colleagues, whether they are market research professionals or marketing professionals, whether they're in the agency side or the client side, those of us who are trying to raise awareness of new methodologies really just need to demonstrate it over and over again and not get discouraged. It takes multiple exposures to a new methodology for it to really start to be perceived as credible. I mean, think about it from like we're branding, as if we were a company advertising a new brand of toothpaste. You wouldn't just throw out one commercial and assume that you're going to get share of mind for that new brand of toothpaste. Well, we have to do the same thing with market research. We've got all these cool new tools and methodologies, and we have to be consistent and persistent and repeat the messages, repeat the demonstrations and the proof points so that we can start to gain credibility with some of these new methodologies.
Great. A lot of educating needs to go on, it sounds like. One of the methods you cite in the book is social media research and the need to easily track what's being said about the brand or the product or your competitors across various social media sites. And recently we've seen that a number of research-based associations have initiated efforts to establish a formal code of ethics for researchers to adopt regarding social media research. I'm wondering, where do you stand on this issue, Catherine? And do you think a formal code is necessary?
Well, unfortunately, I do think that there needs to be some way of addressing ethics in social media research. In an ideal world, I would rather just be part of the standard codes of ethics that organizations like CASRO and SMR and MRA already have. But because this is such a hot topic right now, I do think that there is good reason for us to emphasize the importance of having a specific code of ethics for social media-based market research by calling it out separately, at least temporarily. And to be honest with you, it's really for a political reason more than anything else. As all market researchers are concerned, I'm very concerned of the possibility of drastic regulation mm-hmm. on how we use social media research. Governments in different countries are currently evaluating issues related to privacy in social media and on social networks. And it's in our best interest to be proactive and to say, look, we are behaving ethically. You don't need to overregulate us. So it's really a political move more right. than anything else. And I do believe that over time it will become redundant. Having a code of ethics for social media research will be redundant with having a code of ethics for regular non-social media-based research because all of these things are, you know, quickly converging. But, you know, frankly, if you look at these guidelines – and I do like the word guideline that SMR uses on their code of ethics. If you look at the guidelines from, like, SMR and CASRO, it's all basic common sense. And it's very parallel, very consistent with the traditional code of ethics that market researchers abide by, that professional market researchers abide by. For example, you have to be honest. If you're, you know, if you are, you know, interacting with somebody, you can't misrepresent who you are. You can't be sneaky, and you can't use information gathered under that's being gathered as part of market research to then do lead generation. That's nothing new. It's just that the language about how we define what that means in social media is a little bit different than how we would define what that means in a traditional survey or focus group setting.
No, I think those are all really great points on that topic. You know, another method that you address in the book is the concept of idea management. And for our listeners, can you briefly explain what this method involves and how they can effectively use it to drive customer insights?
I'm glad you brought up that one in particular. It happens to be one of my favorite things these days, and I'm spending a lot of time experimenting with it. And for anybody who hasn't experimented yet with the idea of idea management platforms, there's a wonderful publicly accessible example that you can see called My Starbucks Idea. And I'll use that as sort of our example here, too. So at My Starbucks Idea, anybody can register to become a member of the site and can either post ideas for Starbucks or can vote for or against the ideas that are already posted. Tens of thousands of people have participated on this site. Now, look, not every brand has that loyal and active of a customer base. Mm-hmm. But for many organizations, if you can get the opportunity to bring a group of prospects or customers, or in some cases even employees, to a platform where they can submit and vote on ideas, it's a really exciting thing. You know, for example, one of the types of projects we always do in market research is product concept testing. I know I've done probably over 100 product concept testing studies myself, very often quantitative, maybe starting off with some focus groups or in-depth interviews as a phase one, then leading to quantitative, maybe doing conjoint analysis or max diff. It can be a very involved, complex project. But maybe not all product concept testing projects need that type of methodology. Maybe they don't always have that type of budget and that type of time frame available either. With idea management, you are basically opening it up. Instead of asking people, hey, respond to these ideas or respond to these features and let us know what you think of them, you're making it very easy for people to actually share with you proactively what they want to see. Oh, we'd like to see this new product. I'd like to see this new feature. I think you should change the packaging on this. And then you get the prioritization since people are voting on each other's ideas. Mm-hmm. So it's very engaging. It really speaks to this concept of co-creation that some of us have been talking about in market research for some time now. So really engaging with your community, engaging with your target market to include their ideas in product development. So it really is very exciting. you know, and again, don't get me wrong, I love the traditional approaches to product concept testing. There's a lot of value in them, but it is artificial. You know, it's an artificial thing to say, for example, in an online survey, have people make feature trade-offs. Well, would you rather have this bundle of features or that bundle of features? It's a little bit artificial.
Right.
With idea management, it's completely open. And that is very, very exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of potential for that on the research end. So
yeah, but it's not you know, finger snap either. I mean, you do
right.
have to put there's real discipline. It does take real time. Maybe not as much time as a traditional approach, but it does take real time, and it takes active moderation as well.
Great. And another thing that researchers, I think, are finding is that a lot of these social media channels and other technologies that are available today are making it easy or easier maybe to quickly poll or survey target audiences. We've heard a lot about methods such as Facebook polls or Twitter. What role do you think those should play in market research, and where does that fit in with the traditional survey?
Well, I think that the interesting things about doing things like Facebook polls is that it's really just another form of convenient sampling. And we market researchers have traditionally been trained to cringe whenever we hear the phrase convenience sample. But the truth of the matter is that there are a lot of times where it really is okay to do quick and dirty research. And as soon as I said that, I made 100 enemies in the market research world. But it really is true. You know, we get very caught up in the market research world because we all want to apply rigor. We want to apply our discipline. But the truth of the matter is that we don't always have the luxury of doing that anymore. And the great thing about simple polls like on Facebook or Twitter is that it does allow somebody to do some quick and dirty research. Now, of course, you have to be rational about how you do it. Obviously, this type of research is not perfect, and you have to understand the context. You have to understand whether or not the poll that you're doing on Facebook, is that really being done with anything even closely remote, you know, close or remotely close to your target market? You know, so you do have to think logically about what you're getting. But frankly, I've also seen some really cool Facebook polls done that were specifically on topics for that Facebook fan page.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I've seen brands do cool Facebook polls on just finding out what their Facebook fans want to see on their
right.
on Facebook. You know, what kind of interactions do you want from us on Facebook? Something like that is totally appropriate.
Absolutely. Also in a similar vein, a lot of researchers are, you know, closely looking at mobile research, particularly to use for, to drive people to surveys and whatnot. And I'm wondering what you think researchers today need to know about engaging consumers using mobile, and where does the QR code technology fit in with that?
Well, obviously, mobile is a very hot topic. And to me, the real bottom line here on mobile research is that it's a twist on panels. So in recent years, a lot of primary market research, a lot of survey-based research has been done using panels, and panels are owned by, you know, you see a lot of the advertising and you see a lot of the sample offerings from panel companies like USAMP, SSI, EMI, there's a bunch of sample companies that offer panels. Typically, these panels have been for online surveys, so they recruit online. They send out the survey invitations via email. It's all a lot of panels are really based on online research.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's just that there are companies who are providing an integration of mobile platforms with an online panel that has opted in to receive survey invitations on their mobile devices. So there are a number of different companies now. Survey Analytics, I believe their product is called Survey Swipe, for example. There's a number of different ones out there now where basically people who have mobile devices have opted in to be part of a panel, and they are accepting survey invitations on their mobile devices.
Wow.
And so it's just another kind of panel. So I think it's just sort of maybe my view is a little bit too skeptical, but to me it doesn't seem like it's this radically different thing than what we're already doing. It's just that instead of getting the survey invitation on a laptop or a desktop computer, you're getting it on your mobile device.
Yeah.
Now, there are some considerations here, for example, in terms of the length and the types of questions in the user interface. But, again, to me, this is just an evolution. It's not really a radically new thing.
We've also been hearing a lot lately about text analytics as a research method. Can you describe this a little bit for our listeners and speak to any specific scenarios where this method in particular would be effective?
Yeah, text analytics to me is a very interesting area. It's academically very interesting. And I want to just point out that there is a continuum here from very basic text analytics to very advanced text analytics. There are some tools and approaches for text analytics that are extremely simple and, frankly, you know, free or almost free. And then you've got the really high-end stuff on text analytics. And there are a lot of products and solutions and companies all along that continuum. But text analytics, from a market researcher's point of view, is basically the idea that we have all of this unstructured text. How do we make sense of it? And for those of us who have been in market research for years, one of the things that's always been a challenge is we want to include open-ended questions in our surveys. Not a lot of them, because too many are onerous for the respondent,
sure.
But enough so that we can get at some of the why behind their answers or the, you know, other please specify that you often see in surveys. How do we analyze those responses? Well, there have been some tools available for years that kind of do it, but frankly, they take so much work to use, it's almost better just to do it by hand, mm-hmm. You know, in terms of coding the text responses and categorizing them. Now, there have been a lot of advances in how text can be analyzed to more automate the process of saying, okay, these are the themes that this bucket of unstructured text is really talking about. So taking a bunch of text from an open-ended question in a survey or by getting it from a discussion, say, on a product review site or some other sort of social networking site, say, a discussion about your brand or your product category, either of those are examples of buckets of text that can be analyzed using text analytics. Some at the very low end of text analytics product might simply be identifying the most commonly used terms and phrases and counting them. At the higher end, they are extracting meaning and sentiment to understand whether or not what's being said is positive or negative or neutral. But it's a very complex area, and there's a lot of very strong opinions both for and against believing in the validity of text analytics. I will say that there's been some exciting work out of major universities that seem to be advancing it, but we have to understand that it is not perfect, and mm-hmm. One of the ways we know that it's not perfect is that in some of the research that I've been reading, it seems that there can be issues with replication.
Uh-huh.
So if you take one set of text and you analyze it with a particular tool and then analyze it with another tool, you may get somewhat different results, which, of course, as a researcher, makes us very uncomfortable.
Well, it sounds at least it's something to keep an eye on, if nothing else.
Absolutely. And use it for, you know, at minimum, you know, there are some very low-cost or free tools. I encourage people to start experimenting.
Right. Well, we're running out of time, so I just want to conclude with one last question, which is now that we see that there's, frankly, a large variety of methods to choose from the researcher, what role do you think using these alternative methods will have on sort of moving that needle when it comes to establishing market research as a viable, valuable function really driving business success?
I think that if we can do a good job of promoting some of these alternative methodologies, if we can get people to start thinking about market research as more than surveys and focus groups, it will help us deal with a very bad PR problem that the market research industry has. Right now, there is a lot of negative PR about market research. Too many people associate market research with surveys, and they're skeptical about the value of surveys thanks to a lot of popular books that talk about things like behavioral economics that really point out that there are issues with how accurately people can self-report things like emotions, attitudes, and behaviors. Now, look, researchers have been well aware of these limitations for a long time, and we have ways of mitigating these risks, and we are certainly always careful about how we report research results so we're not overstating what we can conclude.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there are a lot of other methods now that address some of the shortcomings of traditional research. So if we want to stay relevant as the overall as overall industry evolves, we have to show that we are innovative and that we are more than just surveys and focus groups, because unfortunately there is a lot of skepticism about the quality of research related to surveys and focus groups. And the other thing is that if we do a good job of adopting and promoting these new methodologies, it will help us to also overcome the bad PR problem that we have as an industry by getting over our old dogma. In market research, we like to say that market research can be good, fast, or cheap. Pick any two. Well, that don't apply anymore.
Right. Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know, it's that model is broken. We got to get off that crutch. And I know it hurts. I know it's hard to change. But with some of these methodologies, you know what? Research can be fast and inexpensive and good.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. These have been really great insights about how new and emerging market research methods can effectively drive customer insights today. We've been talking to Catherine Korstoff. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcast, and make sure you sign up for the RSS feed so that you can become aware of all our podcast series available to you. And for a free download of Catherine's new ebook, Thinking Outside the Survey, 14 Market Research Methods for Customer Insight, visit www.researchrockstar.com. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Pacala. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.